What's up, everybody? Reporting from 222 West Ortega in Santa Barbara, California, I'm George Nagai, and this is Talkin' Schmidt. Today on the show is Tony Tu. T2 was born in Vietnam and moved to San Francisco as a young child. There in the city is where he started skating. After high school, Tony thought about hanging it up right before moving to Santa Barbara to start college.
But when I moved down to Santa Barbara, I just met more skaters and I was having so much fun, I could not. It was like an addiction I couldn't give up.
Once he relocated to Santa Barbara, I met him skating at the infamous Powell Skate Zone. We've been best of friends ever since. He went on to turn pro for Santa Cruz Skateboards, was part of our illustrious Shorties family, and was once credited by the Felper as having one of the best kickflips in the biz. So here you go, everybody. Tony Tu.
This is Tony Tu, and you're listening to Talking Schmidt.
It's cool, like tonight is the night.
Here we go again.
Just give it the old college try, right here.
All big dogs in.
Schmitty.
96 times, Schmitty.
Thanks, Schmitty.
We on? Schmitty.
Talking Schmidt.
That's called going to the hospital, bitch.
I'd be shit in my pants, man.
Your Rolodex is fucking deep.
I don't give a fuck about your fucking multi-million-dollar numbers.
Who is this guy? Thinks he's tough shit.
What's up?
I'm here for Greg Smith. Yeah!
Check one, check two, check, check, check one, Tony Tu, check, check. Never had that one before. We're here with Tony Tu down in, what is this, Woodside, Redwood City?
It's still called Redwood City. Just moved down here a couple weeks ago. Nice. And it was a big decision to move away from the city. Since my wife Liz works down in Menlo Park, we decided to move the whole family down and I switched jobs and yeah, we're making it happen.
You know you're a hop, skip, and a jump from Steph Curry's house?
I am, I know, but I don't know which house it is. You can't see any of the houses over here.
Yeah.
It's like everyone's got like huge cypress or whatever.
For isolated, like privacy.
Yeah.
I was born about 12 blocks down the street at Kaiser Hospital, grew up in this area, and went to Sequoia High School, so I'm familiar.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a nice place, everything. I want to start like way back.
Okay.
You were born in where?
I actually wasn't born here. I was born in Vietnam.
Oh.
My family immigrated here. We were actually refugees. My mom's family came over first, and then they sponsored us over, and we came over about 1980, and we just went straight to SF. And I went to K through 12 in SF, so...
Were you how old, like 8 or something?
I was 7. So yeah, SF is, it's my, I consider it to be my hometown. I went through K, like elementary school in the Richmond district. I went to Presidio Middle School and then I went to WASH. So
sick.
I'm all Richmond district kid. And that's where I learned how to skate. You know, my perception of the city was pretty linear. I would just go from, you know, basically however the geary worked. So it went from the beach to Embarcadero.
Right.
I would just go back and forth. I didn't really venture too much, you know, sideways. I didn't go to the Mission too much. I didn't go, hadn't heard of Glen Park until after high school. And so all these other neighborhoods, because I didn't have a car. I was very just sort of driven by the bus system.
What area were you living in off Geary?
Yeah, I was in the Richmond district over by 17th and 18th and Balboa.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's my neighborhood. Yeah.
Do you remember getting your first board and like what sparked that or what board it was or?
Basically, I was introduced to skateboarding from my brother. He was in, during this experimental stage, so he would just be really into a lot of different activities, whether it was cycling or whatever. One day he came home with a Lance Mountain, and I remember it was like Burgundy Indies. And I forgot, maybe there were rat bones. And then he went out and somehow it got stolen. And then he came back later, maybe he bought parts and came home with a gator.
Oh.
And it was a white gator and it was one with like the prismatic.
Yeah.
And I basically took to it and I couldn't really stand. I was kneeboarding. And back then you made a board last. And once the tail kind of worn down, you drill the back bolts forward so you have more tail.
Right.
So it's kind of like a refresh. I can't remember what exactly my first board was, but he basically, I just gravitated to it. And then just like all his other activities, he outgrew it within a month or two, but I kind of stuck with it.
Huh.
And then I learned how to roll off a curb. I learned how to then ollie or roll off a bench. But my brother was really good. He taught me, you know, just like everybody else, I was also BMXing, learning how to bunny hop. And one day he taught me how to kickflip. That was my first trick.
Right.
I learned it in a day. Maybe my first trick was learning how to power slide.
Going fast and then just four-wheel sliding.
Yeah, my brother's sort of extreme. So he took me to a hill. He didn't take me to because he says you have to go fast.
Yeah.
In order to go fast, you go a hill. But it scared the shit out of me. And I didn't really learn it that way. I mean, just like with driving a car, he taught me how to drive a car.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have any driver's ed. He just gave me keys. I hopped in the driver's seat, and he made me drive on Geary the first day. And I was flipping out, like driving on like a main street.
Driving in the city is no joke.
And but that's just how he worked. He just puts you basically into a situation, and you just have to perform, and you have to, you know.
Sure.
But yeah, he really inspired me to skateboard, and he was always very supportive. But, you know, growing up as an Asian, you know, kid, it was kind of hard. You know, skateboarding is seen at that time more of a white sport.
Right.
But, you know, we were trying to get, you know, assimilated, trying to become American and whatnot. And, you know, I didn't really care. That's why I kind of actually love skateboarding, is that you can be yourself and not fit in any category.
Individual.
But it was hard. You know, I did get a lot of slack. You know, you get called banana. You're basically yellow on the outside, white on the inside.
Right.
And then even in high school, I remember two of my best friends were black, and they were both skaters.
How long was it till you were comfortable with English?
Oh, pretty soon. I mean, probably like first or second grade.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that wasn't an issue.
No, that wasn't an issue. But just the culture was very different. And most of my friends were Asian still, because the Richmond district is mostly Asians or Russians.
Yeah.
Trying to fit in with all the Asians while trying to actually skate, it was... You're going against the grain.
You kind of stand out in both communities.
Right.
Your own and the skaters. You're like,
right.
Everyone's looking at you like, what's this dude doing?
Yeah. And because of that, you kind of outgrow your sort of cohort a lot, because, you know, you would skateboard and you might meet a couple of friends, and then maybe if they were Asian or whatever, they would just kind of like skateboard for 6 months or a year, and then they drop off, and then you had to find new friends if you wanted to continue.
Yeah.
But it made you evolve. It made you really open to meeting new people and being friendly and just kind of accepting others as who they are, not how they look.
Right. I would think that maybe the parental units might, their discipline might be part of the process of you not skating too long. They're really kind of wanting you to be educated, and they have this expectation of you.
Right.
Is that fair?
That is totally on it. You know, Asians really promote education, and skateboarding is seen as a toy.
Yeah.
And just like, just the words they use, you know, are you going to play skateboard?
Right.
You know, it's not, are you going skateboarding? It's like, are you going to play skateboard?
Yeah.
It's like, are you going to play with Legos?
Yeah.
They don't see it as a profession or has any sort of longevity to that extent. Also, my parents, being Asian parents, also immigrants, they were very strict.
Uh-huh.
I was never allowed to sleep over, even through high school.
Oh, wow.
Basically, if I didn't come home for dinner, I wouldn't eat. So I came home for dinner.
Yeah.
And after I ate dinner, I stayed home.
Uh-huh.
And so that limit how much I can do, and the nightlife was very limited.
Sure.
But it also kept me out of trouble. But my parents, again, they also saw it as a dangerous sport.
Yeah.
A lot of times they would either hide my skateboard. One time my mom just threw my skateboard in her trunk and drove off with it. And then I didn't have a skateboard for the day. So I was like, okay, I wasn't going skating. And then I kind of wised up, and I had two skateboards. I had one at school and one at home. And one time she locked my skateboard in the garage closet, and I like MacGyvered my shoelaces and then picked the lock. Like, I just basically looped my laces around the latch and pulled it as I pulled the door, and it opened. But, you know, they knew exactly what I was doing. I couldn't keep secrets from them. They knew exactly how much I was skateboarding. They didn't like it, per se.
Uh-huh.
Fast forwarding, I felt like I had to give it up once I finished high school because it didn't seem like it was a long-term career choice. But when I moved down to Santa Barbara, I just met more skaters and I was having so much fun. I could not. It was like an addiction I can give up.
Yeah.
That's jumping way ahead. But
right. When your brother taught you the kickflip, right? Looking back at that, between what he told you and what you know, what would you tell somebody that's trying to learn how to do a kickflip? What do you think? Because you had a real good kickflip.
Thanks. For me, learning how to kickflip was basically trying to keep your body in the air as long as possible. So then you can wait for the flip and then anticipate when it's going to flip over and then try to land. So I actually used to teach skateboarding a little bit, and I would bring them to, like, you know, cafeteria lines usually have, like, handlebars on both sides.
Right.
And so I use that, you know, I have them brace themselves up. And so, like, when they kickflip, they push themselves up, and they kind of hang in the air. And then they wait for the board to flip, and then they come down. And then we graduate away from the railing and then do it, you know, normal. And so it's basically the trick is just to stay in the air as long as possible.
Yeah.
But then beyond that, I always looked at the kickflip as I wanted to level out the board in the air so it would either be flat or even sometimes boned out.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought that it looked better or felt better to me. I don't know.
Interesting. I like the two bar action for for those of us that don't have a big jump in us. That could help.
Yeah.
Who were some of the early on crew that you met that was like you were skating with in San Francisco?
They're just, you know, neighborhood kids. But I would say just going up in the avenues, there were some big name sponsor skaters. And they were, Javante went to my high school.
Same years?
No, he's a one grade or two grades ahead of me.
Okay.
But it was interesting. He was dating a girl in my homeroom. So he would come by all the time.
And you knew who he was?
Yeah, I totally did. And, you know, he knew I skated. He didn't really, you know, I was like a little, you know, kid. Yeah. I remember it was when he was filming the Planet Earth video. And then his girlfriend at the time, I don't know if I have this right, but I think his girlfriend at the time got mad because, you know, he was like, the girls. I don't even remember that video part.
Yeah.
I remember him getting a lot of world stuff, and he used to sell his sticker packs. But he also used to, you know, hook me up with boards. But there was also Phil Chen. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah,
he
was like punks.
Stylish guy. And, you know, I still keep in touch with him a little bit on social media. He's doing very well.
Oh, cool.
He's a real estate agent. Like, doing very well.
Nice.
But then, like, Rick Abaceta, he went to Lincoln. So a friend of mine, this guy named Heath, he lived on 2nd and Clement, or California. And he had a quarter pipe. And it was a good quarter pipe. It was built very well, super sturdy, heavy. But he also had wheels connected to it. So once you tipped it, you could roll it. And so we would roll it to Roosevelt. And Phil Chen used to live around... And Javante used to live in the early avenues as well. Oh. And so they would come by and they would basically, hey, can we skate your quarter pipe? And we would roll it to Roosevelt, and I would watch all these sponsored skaters ripping up this ramp.
Right.
I remember seeing like Noah Peacock and Sean Martin. I totally love Sean Martin's style.
Yeah,
it was like so rad. I think one day it was Noah Peacock was learning how to do a blunt fakie, and I just thought it was like the scariest trick ever.
Right.
And I didn't really skate with those guys, but, you know, I sort of looked at them, like definitely idolized them, and I would see them in the distance.
So you're aware of like who good skaters were that lived in your vicinity, like Mike York, Tommy Guerrero.
I knew of Tommy, and I knew of Mike Carroll.
Mike Carroll.
I remember going to this contest in Civic Center. It was like the auditorium. It was sponsored by a Crush, like the soda.
Uh-huh.
And I think Kamal was there too. I think he took first place in that age group.
Oh.
But I think there was some issue where with his age, and so they took his trophy away. I don't know. But I remember and Mike Carroll finished first in his division, and I was most impressed with his ollie skills. Because I remember seeing Mike Carroll and and Tommy Girl at Fort Miley.
Right.
But the bottom part where they had that like the little bump, and they would boost out of there.
Oh, yeah.
And so we used to call big jumps ollie boost.
Uh-huh.
So but you're boosting off like a launch ramp. And right. That's what we used to call it. We used to call it Ollie Boost. But it's like a type of Ollie because you're getting extra air. And okay. We were always like so amazed at how they could connect their board to their feet the whole time.
Yeah.
Because we were like learning how to Ollie one deck, you know, and they're Ollieing like 3 or 4 feet. Yeah. So we were like, wow, that's amazing.
What do you remember going to skate shops? Were you going to Concrete Jungle or Skates on Hate or some? Where would you go?
I went to Concrete Jungle once, I believe. Yeah, I remember it was probably my birthday, and my brother bought me a Santa Cruz, like a Half Moon logo, and then Bullet 66, one with a shield.
Uh-huh.
And I fucking love that shirt. I didn't really go there too much. My shop was more FTC. I would go to the early FTC over on Bush and near Van Ness.
Oh, okay.
And I think some of the other podcasters talked about that. And
Was Ken there?
Yeah, he was super young. It was run by his dad and his mom, Kim. And the skateboard area was just in the back. And one of my friends, a skater at the time, this kid named Benson Wong, he's really into cycling now, but he was notorious, at least in my eyes, for like switching out his boards pretty fast. I mean, back then it was, if you were a non-skateboarder, you switch out your board, you know, 3 weeks to a month, that's fast.
Yeah.
You know, I would probably have my board for like 6 months or a year. So he was always buying boards and I would buy his used decks. I remember early on, I would sometimes see Jim Thiebel there. And, you know, a lot of people say Jim Thiebel is like the man. He's like the biggest heart in skateboarding. He used to give me his old hand-me-downs too, like once in a while, and I was always like super appreciative.
Was this kind of when you started putting together like, I want to get some free stuff, I want to get better at this? Like, was that even in your mind at the time, or were you just like, what was going on?
No,
I mean, were there video cameras at this time? Were you, was anyone filming or taking photos?
Yeah, it was, I shot mostly video with my friends that, and I mainly filmed with the Russian twins, just because they also went to my high school.
Uh-huh.
And the Russian twins were, well, these two kids who were Russian, but they also skated amazingly well. They were straight from Russia. So a lot of people didn't really understand them. I think they're kind of, I wouldn't say demonized, but definitely misunderstood.
Mm.
They were shy. So people didn't really like say, oh, you know, like they were not very approachable or they're so, but they were so good. They were amazingly good. I actually quit skateboarding for like 3 or 4 months or 5 months. I was trying to apply to college and I just got really distracted. But skateboarding then, if you missed out a week or two, you were like missing out a lot. It was, everything was going so fast.
Yeah.
And I remember I came back and everyone was learning switch. The twins were doing like switch and then grabbing. Like George was doing switch heel flips and grabbing Indy. I was like, what? I don't even understand that.
So you remember like early on, what were some of the first free things you were getting? You mentioned Jim Thiebel, yeah?
Yeah. I don't really remember getting sponsored or anything yet before I left San Francisco. In 92, I went down to Santa Barbara. But I remember earlier in the years, I used to go to FTC and, you know, Jim Thiebel used to just grace me with his old decks. And he's a guy, you know, you hear about all the time that he's helped out so many different people. And he probably doesn't remember he's ever helped me out. For a young kid like me, and I didn't, you know, didn't have an allowance or anything, it really made an impact. And I was able to skate and have a decent board, you know, now and again because of Jim. So it definitely made an impact on my situation.
Shout out to Jim Thiebel.
Out.
All right, so let's talk about the big transformation. You go down to Isla Vista, the College of Halloween Havoc, where they close the streets down there and have huge parties. And you're kind of thinking about not skating anymore.
Well, I was kind of thinking about not skateboarding before I went there. You know, I was transitioning to college. So yeah. I went down to Santa Barbara to go to college. I wasn't really thinking too much about it. I just found a house and moved in, and I found out where Powell Skate Zone was.
Oh.
I didn't have a car, and I didn't know how the buses ran, but I had a bike. So I would bike probably half an hour from where I lived, like midtown. So it was just north of Goleta, but not necessarily Santa Barbara. Even though my address said Santa Barbara, it was technically in Goleta. It's called Turnpike. And I would bike from there to the skate zone and skate, you know, basically all day, and then skate back in the dark. And I just did that for the first few days, and I didn't know anybody. I just started to go there all the time, and I just met some of the locals, and they were really amazing. And the guys that embraced me were what I called at the time the shorties guys. You know, it was George Nagai, Manabu Kumakura, Eric Hatch, and then later Tony Bulyalos would come out, and he had just started Shorties Hardware, and he would give me bolts. You know, here and there. Maybe that was my first sponsor.
Shorty's Bolts.
Yeah.
Sick.
And he gave me his number, and I would call him, and he would drive from his house downtown to Powell to drop off bolts for me. And I was like, what? This is crazy. And I just, you know, hung out with those guys, and I just started to skate, and Church of Skating opened.
Oh, yeah.
So the skate shop. And somehow I rode for Church of Skating. So I was on Church of Skating and Shorty's Hardware Bolts. But back then, I mean, I guess going back a little bit, I used to film with the twins a lot. So we would put together response movie videos. And at the time, I was huge on Think. Like, you know, it's just going up in the Bay Area, you know, just seeing Greg, Carol, and, you know, Think was like big.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to be on Think. And I gave him one of my response movie videos, which I later... Many, 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 many years later, I happened to be at their house somehow. I can't remember why or how, but I saw my skate video and I took it back.
No way.
So I have it now. But
sick.
So I somehow stole my own skate sponsoring video back. Sorry, Greg. But he probably would have tossed it anyways. Yeah, so the twins, you know, they helped me out with a lot of footage, and I used that to basically try to get sponsored. Being down in Santa Barbara, and at the time, Mike Santa Rosa was on Think as well.
Mm-hmm.
And also Jeff Chamley, he was living in Santa Barbara, and he had just turned pro for Think. So there was also, it was interesting, even when I went down to Santa Barbara, Think was still like a big thing.
Yeah.
And POW was kind of generic then, you know? And even though we were skating the POW skate zone, I was never thought to, you know, want to ride for POW. But actually at one point, Todd Hastings, who was the brand manager or team manager at one point, he actually gave me a package. He said, go in the warehouse, pick out anything you want. So I picked out boards and whatever. And I was like, I got one package from POW. And so he's like, yeah, maybe you want to ride for POW? And then I was talking to some of my friends, and they're like, no, you know, ride for Other Level. And it was my friend George Nagai and Tony Briseño and Eric Villalobos. So I said, okay, Other Level was basically a shoot-off out of Vision. It was a package deal where I can get Vision shoes. I'm like, okay, I'll get boards and shoes. Like, why not?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, they were terrible shoes. So I hopped on Other Level, and I basically say, you know, Todd, I'm not going to ride for POW. I don't think I was ever on. So I basically left the flow team, if there was a flow team.
Uh-huh.
And then I got an Other Level. And then a month later, those guys that I wanted to be on with the team went to Acme. So I'm like, okay. So, but I was kind of stuck on Other Level. And I was like, okay, whatever. I'll make the best out of it. So I just skated. And I used to do castle contests a lot, you know, because, you know, they would come to POW. POW was one of the major stops.
Yeah.
And I was also, one of my first friends was not George. It was Ty Evans.
Oh, wow.
Ty Evans used to go to the skate zone. He would drive, had this white GTI or Volkswagen Golf he used to ride. And he used to drive from Camarillo up to POW, and he would skate. And, you know, somehow we just became friends. So he used to help me out. And he was also filming a lot too. But somehow, I forgot who it was, but they connected me to Jason Rothmeyer. And he, at the time, was, you know, on again, off again, Santa Cruz and Foundation. I don't know if you remember that. Jason Rothmeyer gave my video to Jeff Kendall, and they came down to a Castle Finals. And I think it was Jeff Kendall and Russ Pope, who was at the time doing SMA before Creature. I didn't really know what to think of it, you know, and I ended up getting fourth, which wasn't great, but it was enough. And they said, yeah, give us a call. Here's our phone number. You know, we'll send you a package. So they started sending me packages. And I remember this, my first package, I came home late. Maybe I was in school, came home late, And Jeff and Ty took my package, opened it up, and said, hey, we came across some gear. You want some? And they were giving my package back to me, but making me do like something. I forgot what. They were like, oh, if you know, I'll give you this set of wheels if you promise to do this. Or,
yeah.
It was just fucking with me.
Wow.
But it was really funny. Like, they stole my package for me and gave it to me in the beat pieces. It was kind of comical. But yeah.
I didn't know you lived with Ty.
We were just roommates in a sort of like a random house.
Was he going to UCSB?
He was going to Santa Barbara City College
to
learn. He was like learning multimedia even back then.
How to mount cameras onto cars.
Not yet. Not yet. Yeah. But he was. I remember him talking about Photoshop and all those things, and I didn't even understand it. But he's been messing with a video camera for a long time. But kind of like the twins, though, he was both a good skateboarder and a good filmer. So he kind of wore both hats. And even years down the line, he wrote for Powell. He was on, you know, Suburban Diners? I forgot what the video was called. But he was a sponsored amateur.
Right.
It was so weird because I moved down to Santa Barbara thinking I was going to go to school, and I just was blown into this situation where I met all these new industry people, and it was even more skateboarding.
Right.
And
that makes school
like,
hard?
It was hard. It was really hard. My first year, I did okay. Second year, I just was not into it. And then I ended up making sure that I had decent grades to be able to drop out.
Oh.
Because I made sure that when the time came, I could go back. And so I dropped out in good standing so that I can go back when you know, I felt like I wanted to. And I did go back about 10 years later. But yeah, it was weird trying to quit skateboarding and getting more into it. And it was kind of weird because in Santa Barbara, if you think about it, it's mostly a white and Hispanic town. I was surrounded by a lot of Asian skaters, and more so than San Francisco.
That's bizarre.
Because I had friends at this university who skated too.
Right.
And so there was like this guy named Nelson Shin.
Was Tone there?
No, Tone, that's like LA.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's much, much later. So I had like four or five friends who skateboarded, and they were Asian in Santa Barbara. And I had like one or zero in San Francisco.
Yeah, but also to be fair, the popularity of skateboarding was growing.
Right. These were people that were skateboarding for a while. They were not new to skateboarding.
And is George from Santa Barbara?
Yeah.
So he was living there besides, and he went to school there too?
George was born and raised and still there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
George, the guy with that Thrasher cover. Somehow he landed it.
Yeah.
Shout out.
And George, the guy, he introduced me to Scott Starr, who's a photographer. And a lot of people don't know Scott Starr. He shot a lot of my early ads.
Do you remember first photo being published?
Yeah, it was a Switch Crooked Grind. It was a Santa Cruz ad. And it said like stronger, better. And there was like pictures of like two guys with like dumbbells and like kind of lifting weights.
That was your first photo ever was an ad.
I think so.
And was it in Thrasher or Transworld? Oh, back cover. Shit.
Because Santa Cruz owned the back cover.
Yeah. They
and so did. My first ad, I think, was a back cover of Thrasher.
How sick. Damn, that's pretty sick.
And Scott was really cool in the sense that he didn't use flashes. He used reflectors. And so it was a little bit non-traditional. And he also tried to shoot things from different angles.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually pretty accomplished. I think there was one year when actually Scott shot six of the 12 covers of Thrasher that year. Like people like Hasoi and stuff. Like,
yeah. He was shooting snowboarding too, I think. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was friends with the Barfoot guys or whatever.
Yeah.
Towards the end, he was shooting a lot of the shorty stuff in Santa Barbara.
Okay.
We would just call him, go find him at the beach. And you know,
he lived down there?
Yeah, he lived in Montecito down by the beaches, and he was always at the beach. And, you know, if you can find him, then drag him over and shoot a photo and then go back to playing Frisbees. Fuck. Oh, and to get this, the first time I met Scott Starr, it was really embarrassing. So I go to George's house, I meet Scott, and somehow I stepped in dog shit. And then I stepped in his car. He's like, what's that smell? And I was like, oh, shit. Literally shit. And like, it was just like the worst first impression.
Damn.
And I'm like trying to like get to know this photographer, and I like just completely made a fool of myself.
Oh, man.
And but he was like cool with it. It's just like, what? Why would I shoot this guy? He just brought shit into my car.
Yeah.
You know? But he was super nice. And yeah, we shot a lot of stuff together over the years.
How rad.
And there was one shot, it was a kickflip over the fence with like a bougainvillea in the background. It was like burgundy. At one point, Bryce said, don't send those to that company. Send it to us. That could have been a cover. So I was like, damn. But it was a inside cover of Thrasher. It was a Santa Cruz. Maybe it was a Direction ad. It was Direction Wheels.
Okay.
Basically, Jeff gave me all these choices to, you know, in terms of what wheel companies and board companies. He said, okay, you're in Santa Cruz. You want Indies or Crux? I'm like, Indie. You know, I'm from San Francisco. I want Indies.
Yeah.
And he's like, do you want Speed Wheels or Direction? I'm like, I want Direction. I want like the elite stuff, you know, for me. Anyways, that's what I felt like were more established brands.
Uh-huh.
And Direction at the time was pretty insane. It was like Mike Crumb, Chris Markovich, Jeff Taylor was on there. I was probably the first AM. I can't remember. But at the time, like, you know, if you were a kid and you were given a choice between Indie and Crux, I mean, it was a no-brainer for me. Much respect to Crux, but I was just like, you know, Indie.
Yeah.
You know? Or if it wasn't Indie, I would go Venture, Thunder, or whatever, like SF truck brands.
Yeah. In Santa Barbara, was there any Frankie Hill sightings?
Not at the time. He was off the map for a while, and I actually didn't engage with Frankie Hill until much later. I'll say like the early 2005.
Oh, really?
Much, much later.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was when this guy named Ty Khan, who was from Carpinteria, and he basically developed this skateboarding company called Diabolico with Santa Rosa.
Yeah.
And it was at the time where I got kicked off Santa Cruz, I didn't want to linger. I didn't want to be a skater that kind of, I didn't want to hold on.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not saying that badly about other people who love skateboarding and want to continue that. But for me, like, once I was no longer a pro, I didn't need to be pro anymore. I was accepting of it and I was okay with moving on. I actually made a point, like, I didn't want to film because I didn't want anything coming out that I thought was less than what I could do. Now thinking back, I think that is completely bullshit, because I think what really matters is, like, are you having fun?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what tricks you're doing anymore. If you're having fun, a slappy is awesome.
But the competitive nature takes over where you're like, I raised the bar to here, I can't go backwards.
Exactly. And that was what I was thinking at the time.
Makes sense.
And so I didn't want to go into a just like a little brand and, you know, be a pro or whatever. But so it was much, much, much later. It was in 2005 or so where I was given an opportunity to be a part of this company called Diabolico. And it was Mike Santa Rosa, myself, George, Jesse Sylvie, and I'm forgetting, oh my God, Mike, just gonna Mike, I can't remember his last name. And we basically put money into this company where, it was Mike, George, and I put $250 in, and we basically paid for the scan for L6 screens. Or whatever, the heat transfers.
Uh-huh.
And then Ty would pay for the wood and whatever, and we would get, you know, boards, and we would never pay it, but it was just like a fun project. And Frankie Hill then got a board on that.
Oh.
And so that's how I interacted with Frankie Hill much, much later, like I said, like 2005 or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Did you ever meet Rosa in the Shorties days?
Yeah, I did. I didn't know her that well. But I would see her and I would say hi. And
she was a phenom.
She was. And I was, you know, also a little shy. I mean, she was gorgeous. So I didn't want to be perving out too much. I remember the very first catalog, it was called Rosa's Secrets. Like, you know, instead of Victoria's Secret, it was Rosa's Secret.
Right.
Yeah, that's how she became really famous. And one of the Shorty's first sort of slogans was, everyone needs a little nut and like two monkeys having sex.
Right.
And that's why Shorties was so awesome back then, because
I love that
they
era.
Gave everything away. They probably gave 80% of their stock, like the inventory, to skaters, and that's how they got the word out.
Mm.
You know, they advertising slap and stuff, but it wasn't like through advertising that got their name out. It was through people like saying, this is a rad company and I want to support it. I would come up to SF and I had Shorty stuff, and I would, you know, give it to the Russian Twins, whoever else, and that's, I don't know.
Huh.
I was always really down for those guys because they really supported me early on.
For sure. Do you have like a highlight of that era, like through the Shorties days? Like, what like a memorable trip or just some part of being like hanging with the crew or whatever?
I would say just the Church of Skating days, you know, the early days, because
you were in those videos, yeah?
Mm-hmm. I was in all six, probably.
Oh, sick.
It was rad because if you were on the team, basically, Church of Skating was funded by Shorties, and Church of Skating was the warehouse. It was a mail order, but it was also the skate shop.
Kind
of
like CCS, but right, before that.
Right. And because it was a mail order, they had a wide distribution, and they had a lot of connections. And that's how they were able to sell the Church of Skating videos to all these shops all over. So even though it was one of the first shops besides like FTC that sold their video shops to other shops.
Yeah.
You know, if you're like a shop in like, say, you know, Cheapskates or whatever in the Midwest, why would you want to buy a Church of Skating video?
Yeah.
You know, no one's really making that much videos, many videos. So that's how we kind of got promoted. And so they were promoting us. So we would go on trips all the time, and the trips were indirectly funded by Shorties. And, you know, Eric Hatch would drive and video, and we didn't have to worry about gas. We didn't have to worry about any stuff. It was like road trips, like every weekend. And we would just go up and down the coast skating. And it was just like really, really fun. And it was, but you were with your friends.
Yeah.
And so you were going skating with your friends, but the gas was paid by Shorties in a way.
So good.
So it was awesome. Right. I don't know if that's actually what happened, but I that's my interpretation of how that went down. And also, like, you know, Shorties paid for all those, you know, DV tapes.
Oh, yeah.
And whatever else, right? So yeah, those Church of Skating videos were fun projects, but they also, they promoted us a lot. You know, all the local skaters got a lot of promotion from them. Mm-hmm. And it was really weird in the sense that my name was more connected to Shorties than it was sometimes connected with Santa Cruz, even though I never rode for Shorties.
Uh-huh.
As a board brand.
Right. Just the Bolts?
Just the Bolts. And
but that was kind of your crew. Like, you hung out with those guys maybe more than whoever was on Santa Cruz at the time?
Well, it was also because of photo incentive. Santa Cruz didn't give photo incentive.
Oh, right. So whereas you would Shorties
would give us photo incentive, and we would get like $200 for a full-page ad.
Sick.
And so if I'm in a Santa Cruz ad, I might even wear a Shorties photo. Shorties t-shirt, yeah. Because I want, you know, you need to make money.
Yeah.
Or you definitely have a sticker on your board. Probably because of that, my name got connected more with Shorties. Actually, after I got kicked off Santa Cruz, it was like, I think right around, almost right before 2000. It was the first time I used to say, oh yeah, I'm down with all the Shorties guys, but I've never worked there. And then I actually got a job as the promotions manager for Shorties, where my job was I was the team manager for the hardware team. Plus I also promoted all the other brands like Ghetto Child and Skateboard Team. And so I got even more connected to Shorties.
Right.
And sometimes the magazines would mix me up with Tone.
Oh.
So there would be a photo of Muska with Tone Nguyen, but the caption would say Muska and Tony too.
Oh.
This is at Trans World. And we're like, what? It was like, and it didn't happen once. It happened like, I think, at least twice.
Oh,
it was,
man,
just really weird. So I apologize to Tone all the time. Like, hey, I know that's you. Other people can't tell, apparently.
What if you got photo instead of? Thanks, Tone.
Let's take a quick time out, hear from some of our peeps, and we'll be right back.
I want to give a shout out and a public service announcement at the same time. Public service announcement, support your local shops. And by supporting your local shops, you are supporting your local skateboarders, because those shops are able to look out and sponsor and give these guys products so they go out and start ripping. Mine was Allskate. Before that, it was Go Skate. Shout out Dale, the dad. I love those stickers. Go Skate or go home, bro. Anyways, this one goes out to Aaron Jones, Skate Virus, out of San Jose. When nobody was there and I was sitting in darkness trying to relearn, Aaron Jones was hooking me up with boards. I walked into his shop. It's a bike shop, but part of it is skateboards. And it's all old school, retro, vintage boards like the Nautis I used to have when I was a kid. Don't go buy it. I still haven't got it, but I want that Nautis glow-in-the-dark looking one. It's so sick. Anyways, support your local skate shop. Do not support your mainstream mall shops. Don't support those shops that got skateboards, but when you walk in and they look at you like you're a kook and they just want your money because they're vamped out of their minds. You know who I'm talking about, and I'm talking to you. So support places like Atlas, Society, Skate Virus, Go Skate. Probably rest in peace. I don't know if you're still around. Go Skate. Stay up. All love. Talking Schmidt is the shit.
Hey, it's Matt D at DLX Skate Shop, 1831 Market at Guerrero, as in Tommy. Come see us. Real, Antihero, Crooked, Thunder, Venture, Spitfire. We are here every day of the week except the big holidays. We've got a curb and we've got smiles on our faces. Come let us get you stoked.
What happened when they kicked you off Santa Cruz? What was the reasoning, or how did that go? Did they give you a call? Did they call you into the office? Did they send you a text? And what was the reasoning? You were pro, right?
Yeah, I was pro. Okay. I turned pro, I think, late 97. You know, it was a short stint, like 3.5 years or 2.5 years. I can't remember, but I kind of lost motivation. And I wouldn't say I wasn't much of a partier, but, you know, I kind of had my party stage too. I just wasn't motivated anymore. And I also had some beefs with the team manager at the time. And then also Lance Dalgard had done an interview with me on, it was like for Transworld Online. And I said, oh, you know, team manager is basically like a babysitter, which you are, you know, everyone that doesn't say, you know, everyone says that, oh, I'm not a babysitter. I'm like, yeah, you are,
yeah.
You know, don't try to glamorize your job. That's what you're doing. You're a babysitter. And so I guess Kendall got a little bummed. Maybe that was a straw that broke the camel's back or whatever. Huh. But there was also a lot of things that I felt like I wasn't getting involved in, or I wasn't having my say. And so I was maybe getting a little turned off, but I was also young. I was a late bloomer, but still, like, I didn't start skating until I was 15. So when I turned pro, I was 25, which is really late.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm a kid still. And so I feel like I didn't grow up until I was like 40. So I was still making little kid mistakes and not really knowing how to talk to people. And, you know, you hear about this all the time. Like, you know, a lot of the younger pro skaters, like, they can be very just stupid.
Or just immature.
Yeah, I probably said a lot of immature, stupid stuff too. And, you know, all together that, I mean, of course I was bummed. It was tough because it was an identity crisis a little bit, because then I didn't know what I was supposed to do. Mm. Like, I'm a skateboarder, but now I'm not pro. Do I go to another company and continue that? And I was like, no, that's not what I want to do. I don't want to hold on. Right. So if I'm not going to be a pro skater, then what do I do? So it was like, I was trying to figure out who am I, like, sort of deal.
Did you see it coming, or was it kind of out of nowhere? Or
I think, well, I just really rubbed, the team manager and I just didn't really like each other.
Oh.
When we were on tour, we butted heads quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was probably a brat too, but I just remember when we were in Chicago one time and I had to pee and they were just fucking with me and they wouldn't let me out. And we were trying to go to the skate shop over there. I forgot the name of it, but then we finally got to a red light and I just opened the door and walked out and I went to the bathroom. And this is before cell phones or anything. And I just like left the van. And it turned out that the skate shop was like another block. But they didn't say shit to me. They just said, they just ignore me. I had to pee really bad. And I don't know, it's just shit like that. I don't want to talk, you know, to be too negative. But, you know, those are the circumstances. But
uh-huh.
I'm not saying that I wasn't at fault. You know, I probably brought on some of these incidents on upon myself too, just being young and stupid.
Right. Good friend of ours just texted in with a question, Mr. Dan Nazaretta.
Oh yeah.
Did you guys meet in Santa Barbara, or did you know him before that?
I met him in Santa Barbara. Okay. He was going to school there, and somehow we connected, probably at Powell maybe. But he's also friends with this guy named Kip Fullback, who's a art professor there, and just hanging out with Dan, and just his whole crew is very, very tight. And he went up to SF and was working at Thrasher, and I think that's how you guys met.
Yep.
And he hooked up the whole the Thrasher video thing, how to. And
yeah, I remember Muska did the how to ollie with the bunny rabbit. You gotta pop like a bunny rabbit.
Yo, what's up? This is Chad Muska. I'm gonna teach you how to ollie with the Thrasher video. to teach you how to ollie. You got to have pop like a rabbit.
And I had the front side and board, backside board slides.
Right.
And then I had the whole outro where I was like trying to, you know, give the directions and whatever, and just kept on messing up. It was like the bloopers. Basically what happened was we were drinking and then we were trying to film that with a straight face and then we were just like messing up.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
I did Rob Welsh, How to Kickflip. And we went to Union Square and he gave the mic to just some random girl and he wrote on a piece of paper and he's like, read this. So it's just like some girl's reading how to do the kickflip and
yeah.
He's showing with the feet. That was a fun one. And I'm pretty sure that was the one where Jake dressed up like the professor, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was a fun video to
yeah.
make. But he's got the question is, favorite college? He's saying, is it Stanford, Cal, or UCSB?
Favorite college is still UCSB.
Really?
Yeah. It's on the beach. It's always sunny. Those are like the good old days of learning how to skate and skating after work and everyone getting together. And yeah, Santa Barbara is still, I hold dear to my heart.
Yeah. Do you go down there still occasionally?
A little bit. I actually hung out with George Nagai last night.
Oh.
We went.
He's up here.
He came up, his wife's family lives in San Jose, and he was up here just for the weekend, and we went out last night, and we got some beers and just like hung out and caught up on stuff, and it was
sick.
Really cool.
Yeah.
We still like try to keep in touch and stuff like that.
I got to ask you, you said that growing up, you kind of had like a little bit of a sheltered as far as like being home and not partying at night and stuff. Going from that straight to Isla Vista to college, that's pretty big change, yin yeah. and yang, if you will. What was that like for you? Is that when you discovered drinking and stuff?
I actually didn't drink at first for a long time.
Oh.
I didn't probably start drinking until maybe after I was 21. Because I was so into skateboarding at one point, and I didn't want to be hungover for Saturday because Saturday was such a big day, and I wanted to be able to produce. And so I didn't drink on Friday nights, and I maybe drank Saturday night, but maybe not that much. And it probably got to a point where when, you know, I kind of got more comfortable with it, then I would, you know, got into party mode. And I had some notoriety about, you know, being drunk at times and falling down and whatever else. But we all used to go out to Isla Vista on a Friday or Saturday night, and in mass, like about 20 of us. And we would basically sit across like 10 guys on one side of the street and 10 guys on the other street. And everyone that walked by, we would just talk shit to them. And it was just kind of fun, just heckling people.
Yeah.
We used to do that every weekend until it got old. It's just a lot of high school kids. So we were sure. sort of over it. And most of us could already buy beer. So we didn't need to be in Isla Vista.
Uh-huh.
And I've actually only spent maybe... In 18 years, only 3 nights in Isla Vista. And one of the nights was at Dan's house.
I've spent more than 3 nights in Isla Vista.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Okay. So you were outside.
Yeah, I was always living downtown, midtown. Yeah, there were certainly times where, and that's kind of how I got sort of Terminator as a nickname, is I used to get, you know, into party mode.
Uh-huh.
But luckily, people confuse me with Manabu, so sometimes I would do bad stuff and he would get the heat for it. But also, like, they'll say, oh yeah, we saw Manabu doing lip slides at San Marcos,
right?
And he was like, that wasn't me. But yeah, we were thinking about getting a shirt that said I am, and it was like, you know, my name, then Manabu's name, then George's name, and it would like check all three.
That's amazing. So did you have you ever had a hangover?
A hangover? Yeah, surely.
Nazaretta claims he's never had one.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's one of those freaks that says he can drink and he just wakes up, he's fine.
I don't think so.
That's why I stopped drinking.
Actually, one of my best skateboarding days was when I was hungover.
Really?
And I'll tell you why. It's because I was so hungover that I didn't have any expectations about doing anything. And so I approached the day like, oh, I could ollie, okay, and it doesn't hurt. I'm having fun. And it was like the littlest things made me happy.
Sure.
Because usually I had all these things I wanted to do. I had like, you know, like all these, like a whole list of items I wanted to do. And it was like, I was in work mode. And when I was hungover, I'm just going to enjoy the day. And it was like so awesome. Uh-huh. So it really is like perspective, like because I didn't have any expectations, everything was cool.
Yeah.
But that was, you know, that was a weird, that's just one random hungover day.
Yeah. I remember when I was younger and just getting into drinking, watching other people hungover, ripping, or even sometimes drunk, I think that kind of like sparked me to want to do, like I, that was my mentality. Yeah. Like it was so crazy. But you would see dudes, I don't even know who in particular, but it was like, holy smokes. We went out partying all night last night. And then the next day, this guy's ripping and he's sweating it out. Mm-hmm. But
well, it's just like, I remember going to Tampa Pro. I had heard Andrew Reynolds. I was in the first heat. I just flown out there. It was my first. I went to Tampa Am because Kendall said, you know, you can't turn pro unless you do Tampa Am. And then a month later, it was Tampa Pro. So I did Tampa Am and Pro like back to back months. But I remember going to the Pro and I had heard that I was in the first heat with Andrew Reynolds.
Fuck.
And he partied till like 4 or 5 in the morning. And the heat was at 10 o'clock. So I'm thinking 7 o'clock Western time. I never skateboard before noon. So I'm like, there's no way Andrew's going to do well. He qualified first.
Yeah.
So I was like, damn, that's insane.
Right. Those guys.
But you know what? My favorite thing to do sometimes is drinking and skating in mini ramp.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's... It just like on a sunny day, you're just drinking a beer and just like gradually.
Yeah.
And it's funny, like you're skateboarding for 3 or 4 hours and you're having so much fun. You can do all these things. Like you're not really feeling the buzz. And then you get off your board and you can barely walk.
Yeah.
It's trippy.
It's so crazy. We used to have a ramp in our backyard and we would do that all the time and be like, holy shit, I was fine on my skateboard.
Yeah, exactly.
It was so weird.
Yeah.
I don't want to take too much of your time, but, just to kind of fast forward to like where we are now, you've gotten married, you got some kids, you moved down to the peninsula, mm-hmm. you're doing a lot of photography. Mm-hmm. What else is going on for you?
Well, after skateboarding, I just wanted to do something creative. And I remember just always being curious about when I was being photographed, what the photographer was doing. I remember being on tour and like, you know, just watching Atiba or Brian Ueda and just seeing what they were doing. They were like just fiddling with all the knobs and stuff. And it was always super interesting to me. And so I used to have a point and shoot, you know, I had a Yashica T4 and everyone had that.
Carl Zeiss lens.
Yeah. And I had two of them. I had one with black and white and one with color. And so I didn't have to, you know, switch out the film.
Oh, nice.
And I was just like super interested and I wanted to just do it. And then one day I'm like, I think I'm gonna try to be a photographer and try to book gigs. And but I didn't really know how to do it, and I just faked it until I made it. I mean,
what do you do? What, like you start with weddings or?
I did portraits. And then but now I've done quite a few weddings. I've done a lot of headshots. I've done corporate work. I've done events. But with kids now, it's so hard. My bandwidth is just like so full. I don't really have much time to dedicate to that anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, now that my kids are getting a little older, I hope to do a little bit more. Mm-hmm. There was a time where I would just be so tired. The last thing I want to do is like turn on my computer to do editing.
Sure.
You know, because a lot of people don't understand that snapping the photo is only like the first part of it.
Yeah.
It's 10%.
Yeah.
You know, and then the 90% is like the agony that you have to go through to get the photo that you want.
Right.
And so they don't understand that. And the way I like to edit is like, I want to make it look like it hasn't been edited. Because sometimes people make it look too fake. And I made a lot of those mistakes too. And I've like learned like to not over edit. I want to under edit and make it look like it's more realistic and natural.
Right.
And also try to like shoot it right the first time in camera, and so that my post-production is less.
Yeah.
So learn how to do that.
Same with video. It's like you want the exposures to be on, you want focus, all those things to be on, so there's less tweaking in the post-production.
Right. But I'm sure it's the same. There's a lot of post-production that people don't understand that you're doing.
Yeah. It's crazy. So your eyes are just bugging out, need a lot of monitor time. People are like, oh, you're a photographer. It's like, yeah, but I'm also a monitor watcher because I have to like get the colors. I have to like crop them sometimes or go through like 5,000 photos to find the one.
It's about the ones.
Whatever it may be, yeah.
Sure.
What is there anything coming up that you're excited about?
I want to plug out my friend Sammy Baptista. Yeah, he just started this company with Brandon Turner called Gilt, G-I-L-T.
Oh, yeah.
And he actually put an old photo of mine that Jake Rosenberg had shot of me.
Sick.
I'm doing a nose bonk on the planter at Embarcadero right in front of the fountain.
Uh-huh.
One of Sammy's friends rendered it and they made it into a shirt, and so he's selling it. So I just want to give his company a shout out. I mean, his story is so amazing. I've known Sammy since he was 9 years old. You know, him going through his accident and getting a third or more of his body burnt and just coming back and seeing him skating again. It's just really, really amazing.
Yeah.
And then him still, trying to be an innovator and an entrepreneur. So it was pretty cool.
We got no choice. We have the creative bug. So it's if you're skating or not, you're always going to try to be doing something creative, the individuality, all those things. It's in our blood.
Yeah.
I got to give a shout out to Brandon Turner.
Shout out.
Because he and I have a date with Wallenberg that he didn't finish last time he was here. And he was damn close. Get back here. Let's get that. Shit. It's been cool hanging, catching up. Is there anything else we need to touch on before?
No, not really. I mean, I'm sure I forgot so many people's names and a lot of special people that have done so much for me. And without all of them, I wouldn't be where I am today. And I'm so grateful, and I want to express gratitude to all the people who have helped me and who taught me good lessons. You know, maybe at the time I thought they were being tough or on me or whatever, but they taught me to, they set me straight.
Well, I heard rumor that Aaron Mesa said you were the smartest to ever go to Embarcadero. Smartest EMB guys.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You got any songs that you want to end this with that we can take out of here?
Let's go out with Hungry Like the Wolf, because it was my breakout video part from Santa Cruz, and Ty picked it out for me. And it was, at the time, I was super hungry, and that was sort of like a theme for me.
Duran.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a good one. All right. Well, Tony, thanks for taking the time out. We got a little window with your kids taking a nap, and I appreciate it. Gave me an excuse to come back to my hometown.
Yeah.
Redwood City, climate best by government test. You heard it here.
Behind.
Big love, man. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. It's an honor.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talking Schmidt. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts. When you subscribe, you'll get notifications every Tuesday of new episodes the minute they become available. Also, please leave reviews and a 5-star rating. It's the best way to help the show grow. All of the episodes will always remain free, but if you would like to help support the show, you can do so at talkingschmidt.com, where you can pick up some merchandise like t-shirts, beanies, hats, and stickers. The website has an entire archive of all of the episodes, with extra photos and videos. Email us with any suggestions, comments, or ways that the show may have improved your life at talkingschmidt@gmail.com. All interviews are conducted, edited, and produced by Schmitty. The intro music is Mary's Cross by the band Nature. A very special shout-out goes to the executive director, Cheryl Camisa. This is Talking Schmidt, where the Rolodex is deep, but the conversation is deeper.